Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino back here for another week of the RHAP Rewind. And today we're talking about the Joe Schmo Show. And this is a real podcast. Everybody here is not an actor, just pretending to be a podcast host as far as I know. Of course, here is the man who's with me every single week to talk about an old TV show. Here is the great Chappelle. Not a schmo.
Rob, what is going on?
What is going on?
Rob, I feel like we did this last night. Didn't we just talk the other day about Big Brother? Like, this is surreal. Are you sure you're not an actor?
Pretty sure not an actor.
Yeah. What about our guest? Is she an actor?
She is probably more of an actor than you or I. She is quite accomplished, though, as a podcaster herself. Of course, you know her as the voice of the people. This is the third time this week we're hearing from the great Melissa Denny.
I am so excited to be here to talk about the Joe Schmo Show, which has literally been in my life for so long. My family, we quote it all the time. I hadn't rewatched it since the first time that it was on the air in 2003, or I might have watched like a couple clips of it, but I wasn't able to find it online. And now finally I got to rewatch it, and turns out some of it does not hold up very well with our current culture. But you know, it was still really fun to see, and it's cool to see like a lot of the actors who at the time I had no idea who they were are now, you know, stars. And so, you know, that was pretty cool. And so I'm very excited to talk about this with you guys.
Yeah, the Joe Schmo Show is available on YouTube. It looks like that somebody uploaded it to YouTube quite recently. So here we are. All 8 episodes of season 1 are available on YouTube. We're going to highlight episode 3 in particular, but talk a lot about episode 1. Full spoilers for season 1 of Joe Schmo Show on this podcast. And I was an overachiever. I watched the whole season to get ready for this.
I'm so glad you did. Honestly, yes. Like, I feel like it's so important to be able to fully understand that you have to see the finale, just because, you know, it's got that famous line, "What is going on?" And, you know, it's also just so crazy to see the reveal. I mean, my heart at least was like pounding. I was like, oh my God, what's going to happen? What's going to happen? I mean, especially when you're watching it live, it was intense. It was really, I mean, because we had no idea what was going to happen. What his reaction was going to be. Is he going to be mad? Is he going to be upset? And, you know, it was great.
Chappelle, do you think that the younger listeners, Gen Zers, do they know what the Joe Schmo Show is?
There are plenty of Gen Xers, millennials, baby boomers, and Gen Zers that have no clue that this exists. Could never point this man out of a lineup. But like Melissa, I remember this man so vividly. I feel like I grew with him in this journey that he goes on during this show. You bond with this man. You empathize with this man throughout the season. So for me, if I had ran into him in 2004, 2005, I probably would have freaked out. But here in 2021... Yeah, I highly doubt that he is like a recognizable face or a household name, but make no mistake, he was back then.
Okay. Could you describe the premise of this show?
Yeah, I got you. Yeah, the Joe Schmo Show is basically, this was like Spike TV's answer to reality TV. They wanted to...
Could you explain what Spike TV was?
That's a lot harder. Spike TV...
Is that not a thing anymore?
Pretty sure it's not a thing. I think it's funny. Gone. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's gone, but I believe it's owned by Paramount. So Spike TV was like... I don't even know how to describe it. It's like a network for men, right? So like you had Lifetime that was like TV for women, and you had We that was like movies for women and all this other stuff. But then you're like, we need something that men can sink their teeth into. Like, let's get the man show on here. Let's get like Pros versus Joes and all these other like goofy, like hyper masculine shows. And let's make fun of the things that the feminine energy likes to enjoy. So like dating shows and reality shows. Let's lean into that. And so this was Spike TV's way of poking fun at this whole genre that they really weren't a part of. And so they created a premise that basically they were going to have a reality show that was completely fake. And that the main character was the only person who was not an actor, and that he was believing that he was in like a Big Brother or a Survivor style television show where he lives in a house full of strangers. They compete for money. They eliminate somebody week to week. But the entire thing is scripted and it's a hoax to everybody except him. And so that's the show. Every week they eliminate somebody, but we get to see the behind the scenes of the actors trying to make this happen and the production people trying to fool this man who thinks he's competing for $100,000.
Yeah, and that's what I thought was the most interesting thing about this whole show was that you really have the POV of behind the scenes of the production where you are seeing like the actors are giving confessionals and you know the producers are giving confessionals about, oh, is he on to us? We made a mistake. And so you're hearing about a lot of different things that are going on in terms of making the show, which I think is very fascinating to see, and you don't get really on any other reality TV show.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, this was one of those things where it was like, yeah, as a reality TV consumer, you want to put yourself in Joe Schmo's place, right? The main character being Matt Kennedy Gould. But you're also kind of seeing, in a way, how the sausage was made. You know, like you see the background, you see what the actors are going through. And so parts of you are empathizing with the actors at times. Like the actors are coming in and they are very much normal people as well, right? Like they have to do well at their jobs to keep this thing going. And there's a lot of times where the actors slip up and then they have to make up for their mistakes and still keep this thing going to make the show a success. So it's a very trapeze act that they're having to, you know, handle here, where it's like mm-hmm. any wrong move could be the end of the show and this man could completely freak out. We don't know what could happen.
Yeah.
So it's fun to watch from that perspective too.
I mean, think about it. They're literally spending the night there. They're like, it's not like, oh, okay, like I'm here for a couple hours, then I go home and then I get to be myself. So you have to literally be in character 24/7. I feel like that would be so unbelievably hard just because you never know when he's going to be like walking into the room or whatever. And you would have to be having an in-character conversation with someone. You can't just kind of like be yourself. And then all of a sudden he walks in and you have to flip it on a switch and you're a character. You have to be in character 24/7. I can't even imagine. I feel like that would be so hard.
Yeah. They set up this very ambitious premise where they tell the audience in the first episode that this took like a year to write the script for this show, where they ended up casting all of the actors. There's a lot more about that in the finale of the links that they went through to find the cast of this show. And then basically they went on a casting search to find the one person who they could put into this universe of it being the Joe Schmo show. Chappelle, what do you think about the ultimate Joe Schmo, Matthew Kennedy Gould?
In my opinion, they picked the perfect person for mm-hmm. this person. There are moments throughout this season where I'm like, anybody else would have reacted like this, but they found the one guy who would have such deep connections with these people, who would feel so strongly about these people, who would like get so invested in the show. Like, they found this person who, for 2003, is probably one of the least problematic people that exist at that time for that era. Like, there are things that are happening, and he's still, like, inappropriate in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of times where he's like, no, that's fine. Live your life. You like this? Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. Like, these people are throwing weird scenarios at him. They're throwing unorthodox things at him. They're throwing personal things at him. And for the most part, he's forgiving them. He's like he's crying with them as they use fake tears. Like, they found the perfect Patsy. I love this guy. I just love watching him on TV. Like, I'm not a touchy-feely person at all, but like, he's like my avatar for that because he is feeling all the things all the time. It's great.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting how they seemingly like changed the premise of the show, like on like the second episode, basically, like when he breaks down because Earl is going home, you know, they clearly were like, oh, okay, we need to do something else here because this is not going to work where we're just like poking fun at this guy and trying to like, you know, make fun at his expense. Instead, we need to, you know, kind of go the other direction and be like, oh no, look at this great guy. He's reacting in such a great way to all these things and kind of trying to make it more so that these good things are happening to him or like crazy things are happening around him instead of like, oh, let's put him in an embarrassing situation. And I do appreciate that kind of change because I do feel like if they had just been like making him feel embarrassed, like for a few weeks, like in a bunch, like 8 episodes, it would have been terrible. I feel like we would have totally turned against like the production team and instead been like, how could you do this to this person? And now instead we're like, kind of feeling like we're rooting for him along with the cast, especially because I feel like they picked DR sessions where they or confessionals where they would say like, you know, what a great guy. I really like him a lot, you know, blah, blah, blah. Instead of like, oh, this guy, I can't believe he fell for it. You know, I feel like they really kind of changed the tone of the show. And I think that was a good call.
Yeah. This really just was so wild to get the like premise up front of what they were going to try to do, because they do try to, you know, it is a spoof of a reality TV show. So there are like a lot of reality TV tropes that they are trying to build off of. This is shot, I guess, sometime in 2003. That it airs, original release is September 2nd, 2003. So you'd imagine they would have filmed it earlier in the year. And so it's building off of a lot of the things that you see in the first couple of years of reality TV. And I guess it's not such a ludicrous premise for Joe Schmo that he's on this show called The Lap of Luxury.
Well, you know, back then, Rob, it's 2003. Look at the RHAP rewind. We have covered things like Kid Nation that literally put like 6-year-olds in the desert, and Melissa was there. Melissa will tell you
that's
an intense show.
Yeah,
but that's an intense show. And so it's like, if you can think of a world where somebody is like putting children in a old
that was like
Western
4 years
town,
after this.
Yeah, like, but that's the kind of like world we were living in back then. It was like anything could be a reality TV show. Also, Joe Schmo is very like close to the premise of The Truman Show. So some people who like some of the film buffs, like maybe Melissa, would be familiar with The Truman Show, where it was more like I think Jim Carrey's character was followed by a whole bunch of people who were, you know, pretty much filming him for a TV show that he was not known of. And eventually one of the actresses breaks character, blah, 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 blah. I don't want to ruin it too bad for you. But it's the same kind of concept, where it's like we put this one person in a world and we just watch them like a fishbowl, you know, like, you know, kind of like the concept of Big Brother a little bit. And so, yeah, it's not completely unbelievable that you'd be on a show called The Lap of Luxury for $100,000 when people at this time were competing for like Flavor Flav's love and stuff. You know?
So if you were to go back and to rewatch Joe Schmo Show, I think the first thing that would jump out to you as you were watching it is that they go through the whole cast and it's this person as the a-hole, and then this person as the best friend. And then we get to Kristen Wiig as Dr. Pat. So... This is just very wild to me. This was like right before Kristen Wiig like went to SNL. She had been a groundling before that. Does Kristen Wiig ever acknowledge her role on the Joe Schmo Show? Does anybody know? Does she ever talk about this?
I was wondering that too. I was going to look it up because I'd be very interested to know if she ever referenced it. I don't think I've ever seen it, because I knew. So I had seen the Joe Schmo Show when it aired. And then I had seen Kristen Wiig on SNL, and I literally did not know that those were the same people until years later when I was like looking on her Wikipedia page or something, and it said she was on the Joe Schmo Show, and I was like, wait, what? Because I totally remembered the show, but I don't know why I didn't put two and two together that this was the same person. I think the hair really threw me off. And David Hornsby as well. Like, I mean, he is a famous guy. He's on It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia as Rickety Cricket. And he also like writes and directs and produces that show. So like he's gone on to big things.
Yeah.
He was Hutch. Yes.
The Hutch.
Yes. And honestly, like, it's kind of wild to see all these people, you know, on this show that like, it's crazy. I mean, like looking back on it, and you're seeing Kristen Wiig do all this wild reality TV show stuff, and then she like gets hurt in one of the episodes and has to go to the hospital. I mean, like, that's crazy. It's Kristen Wiig.
Yeah. This is her third credit on IMDb as Dr. Pat the Quack. It looks like she doesn't get to SNL until 2008. Is that right? That feels maybe it's she's I gotta think she's on earlier than that. I feel like she's 2005. Yeah. That's when she first gets there.
So, wow.
Yeah. So 2 years after this, she's going to be on SNL. But she, if you go to the Joe Schmo Show IMDb page, Kristen Wiig is not even on there. So I don't know if her publicists have tried to wipe her from the record. Yeah.
Yeah.
But she's very good in this.
Oh, yeah. I mean, all the actors are so good in it. I mean, they're totally believable in their parts. And I mean, when my family and I watched it, we just like absolutely thought Hutch was hilarious. And like, it's funny now that I like watch it. I mean, I was like 13 at the time when I watched it. So like a lot of the humor is a little bit lost on me now, because I feel like at the time it's very like 13-year-old humor. Whereas now I'm kind of like, oh, some of this stuff is like not so great. I mean, the fact that like every challenge has to do with like, you know, licking chocolate off a model's body, yeah, or like, you know, like wet t-shirt contest, or like everyone wearing little teeny pairs of underwear, like that. There's a lot of, I would say, problematic stuff. I think that this would be a very different show had it aired today. Mm-hmm. You know, but that was the way it was then on TV. Like that was like totally acceptable. And I mean, especially because, you know, like Chappelle said, this was Spike TV. It was supposed to be like the man's channel. And so, you know, I feel like that certainly had an influence on like what they had there. But I do think that it was strange to watch some of it now, for sure.
Yeah. I think that the fact that this was a Spike TV show, like, I don't know what Matthew Kennedy Gold knew at the time, but I feel like that if the context is like, hey, I'm on a crazy reality show that's on the men's channel, okay. Like, I think that then you sort of like can understand like why some of the things are happening, as opposed to like if you thought this was like Big Brother or Survivor, you would say like, what the hell is this? Like, there's no way this could be real.
Oh yeah, for sure. Like, Spike gives it license to be a little bit more kind of like, you know, edgy in those ways, right, where it's a little problematic on the masculine side. So like, yeah, we brought out this model and she's going to be topless. It's like, oh, it's Spike, so it kind of makes sense. So I could see why he's not questioning things constantly. Whereas like, if you told me this is CBS or, you know, it's just, I'm like, no, there's no way.
You're like, no.
There's no way that this is happening. But yeah, Spike was just trying to build a network off of like we got to give the men something to watch and laugh at. And you know, how else can men laugh at rather than to just like make fun of a man wearing ladies' underwear? You know, like it's very juvenile, but it is the world we were living in 2003, especially on Spike TV.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was funny how they referenced Survivor a lot, yeah, in the show. Like, you know, she talked about how Mr. Hatch was her, you know, inspiration and idol, but like, you know, she forgot his first name, so that was not great. And then, you know, she does the Sue speech about like, if you were dying and I would not give you water or whatever. And then, you know, they actually bring in Jerry. So I thought that was really funny. I feel like this was like basically like the beginnings where of reality TV, where it was just so huge. And all at the time, like, all these reality shows were coming out. Every channel wanted to cash in on the reality TV craze. And so I do see totally how he would believe that this new reality show was coming up, because at the time, new reality shows were coming up all the time and they were all like these similar premises. And it really, and even though now, like, if they tried to pull this off nowadays, someone might come in and be like, okay, all these people are caricatures. Like, they're clearly all here to like play a role. Whereas back then, like, these were barely caricatures. Like, this was so new that like, it wasn't that crazy to have these people as like, oh, these are reality TV tropes, because they weren't really tropes at the time. It was new. So, you know, it all kind of makes sense. And I think that as we come to see when they try and pull this off, even just a year later, it doesn't always work out like they intend for Joe Schmo too. So, you know, I just feel like it's really, it all makes sense at the time. I think now watching it, it's kind of like, well, duh, you're not going to have like these exact caricatures on a show. Like, that's not the way people cast nowadays. But at the time, it was new.
Yeah. And before we get into the episode, Rob, let me just tell you some other shows that were going on around this time on Spike TV.
Yes.
Right. Like, what are the men clamoring for in the reality TV world? We got Trucks, exclamation point. We got Hotlines.
What's Hotlines which about?
Is, it's men love
adventures
that.
In exotic, fun hotspots with a, you know, sexy host and all this other good stuff.
Okay.
Right? Yeah. Ride with Funkmaster Flex.
Okay.
Yeah, we had the video game awards because men love video games, mm-hmm. right? Like, it was just like typical, like, this is going to be man stuff. 10 things every guy should experience. You know, these are reality shows that legit came on Spike. You know, On the Road, a true rock and roll story. Like, it, you know, it's just, okay, we get it. Like, this is men stuff. And so, yeah, you say, okay, we're going to
Yeah, but Melissa's watching it.
Yeah, Melissa.
Yeah, my entire
family is watching it.
It literally was like a family-friendly show that we watched. I don't know what the heck my parents were thinking, but like they're like, yeah, you and your younger brother, we can all watch this together and laugh about it. Like we would quote the show all the time, that ashes to ashes, dust to dust, like Rob, you're dead to us. Mm-hmm. We would quote that stuff all the time. I mean, those
would you break a dish after that?
So funny. No, we wouldn't. That would be not allowed at our household, but we'd always just be like, Dad, you're dead to us. And we would just crack up. And then like the next season where it was like they had like a pearl necklace and it was like, your neck is bare and so is your place in our heart. And that was like the line. Wow. And they'd always have like a line that they would say. And we just thought it was the funniest thing ever.
Yes.
And I don't know what my parents were doing having me watch that.
I don't know.
It's just TV.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, it was so acceptable back then.
Look, it was.
I was watching stuff like that too, and my parents definitely weren't involved. But if they were involved, I probably wouldn't have watched half the shows that I would talk about now. But yeah, like this was normal, and the big reveal is such a big deal. Like the everybody, like this man became a household name just off of the reaction for when that is finally revealed that this is a reality show. And so it's not like this was confined to Spike, because once it happened, the world took notice. So yeah, I don't blame anybody's family for having them tuned in, because it was just one of those shows that you kind of had to watch.
Yeah.
And the way that they reveal it too, I thought was really good, where it was like, wait, I'm sorry, guys. Like, I'm sorry. I'm getting word that something's going on. Like one of you guys needs to just like be honest and tell us that there's something's wrong with you or whatever. And they're just like, everyone's looking around like, what's going on? And then finally Hutch is like, fine, I'm an actor. Like, and they're like, well, let's be honest. I mean, who else is an actor here? And everyone's like, Who is it? And then everyone like slowly raises their hand. Ah, it's so crazy. And so then good. Matt thinks that it's him and his friend Brian are the only two that are not actors. And then it's revealed that Brian's an actor too. And it's just
Even Brian.
Yeah.
Also, I love how they try and pull off that like Hutch won the show. Like there is no way that those people would be voting for Hutch. Like I love how they tried to pretend like that would actually happen.
Yeah. Well, that was a fun running gag through the season where that every time like you think that Hutch, who's the a-hole, that he is like, there's a million different ways that they're trying to get rid of him. And he either wins immunity or like something else happens, or that the one time that he gets expelled from the show, then a letter comes in from the lawyers where they end up saying that he gets to stay. And so like, Hutch gets saved over and over and over again, even though that Matt does not really like the Hutch.
Does not care for him. And he's trying to get him out since like episode one, basically, because that's the whole point of the Hutch. He's supposed to be the foil that's there the whole time. Mm-hmm. And
literally to the end.
Yeah,
they just cannot get rid of him. And that's, I feel like that's the way it is a lot of the times in reality shows, where it's like the one villain, it's like you just can't get rid of them. It's not like an easy like, okay, well, let's just all vote them out if we don't like them. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah, it's like Russell Hantz like finding immunity idol after immunity idol and then winning immunity and then coming back for Heroes vs. Dylan thinking that he won a season, and then, oh, Tyson votes himself out, and then this person goes home, and then JT gives somebody an idol. It's like, how is Russell Hantz doing this? Mm-hmm. Why does he make it to the end? Are these shenanigans? We'll never know.
They call me the Hantz.
The Hantz. Mm-hmm. There was tons of shenanigans in Joe Schmo. And normally I'm like, yeah, I love shenanigans. And this show is, you know, shenanigans from beginning to end.
Yeah.
I also love how, and even in the first challenge, like how they have to like rig it so that way the people win who they want to win. Mm-hmm. And like the first challenge, it's like, oh, guess whose underwear is whose? And he got it like all right, that they had to change the answers so that way like they had to not have the people who were supposed to have the underwear. They made it so that the underwear didn't really make sense. Like, who got what? Like, it was like, why would Earl have that fish one? That's like, it's this big or something. Like, if he's like some like grizzled army vet, like there's no way. And then like, they give like some like pair of panties to Dr. Pat. And like, everyone's got like the underwear that does not match their personality. And they just have to like go with it and be like, yeah, no, that's mine. That's mine. Mm-hmm. So funny.
Yeah.
It's because they had the perfect mark. Mm-hmm. This is the guy. The perfect man.
Yeah, perfect
he's like, I love how he got it so right. And then he's like, I think I got like two of them right. I was so off. And really, he was right.
Well, that was my favorite thing about the show, where you saw where the production had to scramble and to try to keep it going. So I guess I found that I wasn't necessarily rooting for Matt throughout the show. I was rooting for the production to not screw it up and be able to pull this thing off.
I loved how in the beginning of every episode, they would start it off with a production meeting where you were like, okay, what's on the agenda for today? Like, are we dialing it up to 11 or are we just trying to keep it very realistic today? Or like, what's our plan? And I loved how they would give like notes to the characters and you'd really just get to see like what they're thinking and like what's going on. I loved that.
Yeah. Chappelle, do you feel like, should they have come into this with more of like a mission of what they wanted to try to do? Or it's like basically like the goal was, can we get to the end of this play without the guy figuring it out? Like, I feel like that they didn't have like sort of a mission of at the end of this thing, we're going to make this guy vote out his best friend.
Oh, see, yeah, you took it one step further. Yeah, I think that's so ambitious, right? Like, this was already like a crazy undertaking that they were in, like that they decided to just like dive into. They practiced, they rehearsed all the scenes pretty much. Like, it's not like they were just like improvising. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of it was off the cuff, but they put so much work into this to where, like, if you had added that at like that extra little bit of like, and then at the end we want him to vote out his mom or something like that, you know, like I don't know if they would have been able to pull that off. Because they were just lucky to have this sweet guy who would just kind of go along with whatever they had. So they might have gotten it. But I think it's ambitious to think that it would like to assume that you could. And that would make it a lot easier to get caught as well. Because their goal is to not get caught. These actors are real actors and actresses, and their skill level is going to determine whether or not they can pull this off. Even production, like, the wrong cameraman in the wrong place. They're coming out of the wrong room at the wrong time and he sees it. Like, he's going to start asking questions. I don't know if they should have had a goal other than getting him to the end and just trying to like survive. It was like every day was just another, like, if we could just get through these next 24 hours and then we can start all over again tomorrow until they whittled it down to the final three. Mm-hmm.
I thought it was so shocking in the end when they revealed that they had rehearsed the scenes. Like the blocking for the scenes and the scenes themselves. Like, I was shocked by that because I thought, you know, they gave him like beats to hit or like, oh, here's the end goal of this, you know, breakfast quote unquote scene. Like, I want him to be suspicious of her or I want her to reveal that she's, you know, into the host or whatever. Like, I thought it was just kind of like general notes of like, okay, this is the vibe we're trying to go for. Like, this is what you're supposed to do. Instead, it was literally that they like rehearsed with like a stand-in as Matt and just like, okay, you're gonna stand here, you're gonna sit here, you're gonna come in from this room. Like, I couldn't believe it. I mean, they just felt like, I did feel like they didn't really need to do that. I mean, maybe they did, but it just seems like, I had no idea it was so rehearsed. I thought that it was more, okay, let's throw you guys in there, you guys are improv actors, just like go improv. I didn't know it was like, okay, now you're going to be handcuffed to him and he's going to come in and you're going to be meet him on the stairs and like just try and guess what Matt was going to do in the moment. I mean, that's wild to me.
Yeah. And it makes sense. Like, I agree with you 100% that it doesn't occur to you that they went through that much, that much effort for him because you assume, you say you're actors. Here's your motivation. Here's the plot. Go act.
Right.
And just all you have to do is just get him through scene to scene. But honestly, I could just imagine how much pressure that would be. And then like, what if you do step on somebody else's like line or something like that? Or like, if I'm working on Matt and I'm trying to get this one thing across to him and you are like, oh, this is my perfect opportunity to do the thing that I want to do. It's like, okay, now I'm thrown off and maybe we missed the thing that we were looking for, because this is still a TV show. So they still know what they want to present to television. They still want him in the women's underwear. They still want him, you know, having this emotional response to Earl. Like, so there's still that need for this like hard outline, especially when things can go off the rails so easily. So yeah, I mean, from your point of view, and yeah, back then I could just like, just think that like, oh yeah, they were just, you know, kind of just going with it. They know what story they're trying to tell here. But then when they show the amount of work they put into it, I'm like, yeah, you're probably right. That probably does make sense. Because you don't want somebody, like, you know, going the wrong direction when you clearly have a plot you're trying, you know, to convey.
I also thought it was interesting how they, like, had, how sometimes he, like, played even further into their hands than they, like, thought he would. Like, when they're like, okay, we want him to want, to think that Ashley is a mean girl. Like, we want Ashley to really come across as a mean girl. And it's like, She comes to him, she kind of gossips with him, whatever. And then like the next second he goes around plotting to the rest of the house, like, okay, we're getting Ashley out, we're voting her out. And they're like, oh, okay, I guess this is what we're doing. We didn't think he was going to go around and do this, but okay. And, you know, I just thought that was so funny that he was just like so into the game that he was like, okay, I'm going to like scheme and plot and get everyone to vote Ashley out and do this and that. And, it's so great.
Yeah. I think it helps also that he seems to be a pretty big reality TV fan himself, that he mentions Tina Wesson a couple of times throughout the episodes. He also talks about how he's like, you know, I didn't understand it when Tina Wesson brought that guy to the end and then she lost, but I totally get it now. It totally makes sense to me. So like he certainly has seen his share of these Survivor seasons.
Yeah, definitely.
And they made plenty of references to it. It's kind of like he said in his interview, like, oh, I really like Survivor. And they're like, cool, because we're going to make this as close to Survivor as possible. We want you to feel comfortable. And so they're like, we got somebody quoting Richard Hatch and we have Jerry Matthews. So yeah, they lean into it. They lean into it a lot.
It's also, I mean, I feel like it's hard to understand now, but like at the time it was like these reality shows were huge. Like, everybody watched them. Everybody talked about them. It was so pervasive in our culture. Like it was just this new thing that everyone watched. Like I watched the first season of Survivor, like with my parents, and it was just like, what is this? Oh my God. It was so exciting. And like to watch the first season of Big Brother, it was like, it just was like these shows just started popping up everywhere. And it was so, I mean, it was so huge. Like, I feel like it's hard to understand now because it's like, there aren't really any reality shows that are just so culturally huge. Like they were in the beginning.
What about
like,
Too Hot to Handle, Melissa?
I don't watch Too Hot to Handle. So well, it can't be that, can't be that high.
No,
it's not. You know, it's weird because nowadays it's like, okay, we watch Big Brother. And maybe you'll find a couple friends in your real life who like watch the show, and that's great. But there's so much more content out there that it's really like, you know, you don't really find, it's not like everybody watches Big Brother. It's like, maybe they've heard of it, maybe they haven't, but that's that. But at the time when these reality shows were first coming out, like everybody knew about them. So like, it does seem like when you're watching it now, like when you're watching the Joe Schmo show, you're like, man, like, it's crazy how all these people were Survivor fans. Like, it's weird that they were all invested in, like, super into reality TV. But it's like, that was TV at that point. Like, when Survivor came out, that was TV. And so it really makes sense, like, all these references and things like that. Like, that was just part of the culture at that point. I mean, it's like for a while when people were, like, quoting, like, you are the weakest link, goodbye. Even, like, I mean, nowadays people are like, oh, you must have been an amazing, like, you know, weakest link fan. And it's like, no. Like, that was just like the culture. Like that was what everyone was talking about. And so now it's very spread out. It's very diverse. If people are watching many, many different things, you can watch whatever, but like that was like a cultural touchstone, was like the new reality TV stuff. So, you know, it's kind of, it's weird to see that now, you know, cause it's really not like that.
What about the ethics of the Joe Schmo show? Was this ethical decision to create the Joe Schmo show and build a reality TV show with the intention of tricking this man, but he's also the winner of the show. When they reveal to him that it's all fake, they tell him, but all of the prizes were yours. Everything here, the $100,000, the 42-inch television, which is, you know, not as much of a prize in 2021 as it is in...
$30.
Yeah.
I feel like it's...
20
it's,
on Black Friday, yeah.
It's certainly ethically ambiguous. I feel like it's tough because it's like, you know, once he signs the contract saying that he's going to be on a reality show and they have the usage of his name and likeness and footage and all that. And then, you know, it's like he thinks it's one thing, but really they're just talking about a different show. And then the end result, it's like he can't then pull out and be like, no, I don't want to embarrass myself like this. I don't want to be associated with this project. I thought I was on, you know, the Lab of Luxury or whatever. Yeah. And, you know, but he's already signed his rights away. So like he basically just like has to be okay with it. And I think that, you know, I do appreciate that at the end, they tried to kind of say like, you know, you have such a good heart and you're such a great guy. And that's why we did this for you. But it is weird. And I do, you know, I do side with Matt in his like end interview when he says to the host, like, I take umbrage with the idea that you guys are saying like, we did this for you because you didn't do this for me. You decided you were going to create a fake show. You cast all these actors, you did all this stuff, and then you went searching for a person to fit in as your Joe Schmo. But it wasn't that you did this for me, Matt. You did this for yourselves, and now you're pretending that you did it for me. So like,
it's like the end of Breaking Bad.
I feel for him because, you know, that's such a tricky position to be put into. It's like, yeah, sure, you're happy you get $100,000, but like you also probably would have liked to win $100,000 and not be humiliated. You know, like that probably would have been a little bit better. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as much as he says at the end of the show that he's happy with how it turned out generally, and that, you know, like he's satisfied and all that, and we're all ending on good terms. A few years later, he did an interview where he said that he wishes he had never done the show at all because it was so humiliating, and that, you know, people made fun of him and that he felt totally ashamed and embarrassed for years, and he like couldn't get a job or anything. And I just feel like I feel bad for him because that's not really what you want. Like, we think of Matt Kennedy Gould and we're like, wow, what a great like reaction he had at the end, and what a fun TV show and all this stuff. But like, this really did impact his life in a negative way, which is really unfortunate. And I really wish it wasn't like that.
Yeah, I feel bad for him because he doesn't walk away from this loving this. But again, this is Spike.
Yeah.
So it wasn't made to be a feel good show about this man. Like, they tried to massage his ego at the end. Yeah. Like, you're such a nice guy, we did this for you. Mm-hmm. But this is Spike TV. Spike TV was putting you in these ladies' underwear because they thought it would be funny to laugh at you. Mm-hmm. They were using you. They did this to you, not for you. You know, mm-hmm. And like, had this been like ABC or something like that, it would have been a feel good story. They would have been telling a whole different tale. You know, like The Biggest Loser is one of those reality shows where it's very problematic watching it through a 2021 lens. But these people were trying to lose weight to be like, to better their lives, to better their health, you know, very much like a feel good story that was going to be told in the end. That is not what this was. That's just what they tried to sell to him so that he would not, you know, mm-hmm. be like upset with them.
Right.
Maybe even pursue legal actions or whatever.
Right. You need buy-in from Matthew Kennedy Gould at the end of this thing. Otherwise, like if he is not happy and he does not want this to exist, I think that makes it a very murky proposition moving forward for the rest of the production. At the end, they're saying like, oh, we're having a big party for you. We're taking you to the Playboy Mansion. Like, they're really trying to still like dangle carrots in front of him about like all the different things that are in store for him now as the star and the face of this. But as far as like the ethical question that for this, yeah, it is an unethical thing to do to him. But I guess my hot take is every reality show is the Joe Schmo show. You think you're getting one thing. You're getting something else. You think you're in control. You're not in control. So every single reality TV show contestant on some level is Joe Schmo. And at least he got $100,000 for his troubles. Like, a lot of people don't get nearly what he got. And so, you know, he came across, I guess, fine in all of this. A lot of people come across a lot worse and got a lot less for their trouble.
Yeah. Look no further than Jerry Matthew. I'm sorry, Melissa, but
agreed.
Jerry's in this episode as like, I was on Survivor and I was the quote unquote bitch. And that's why they brought me in, because they want me to be the bitch judge and to be mean to all the contestants. But Jerry went on Survivor to have an adventure. She did not go on Survivor to be a villain. She was portrayed as a villain in her season. And she wore it proudly. You know, she wore the black hat and all that good stuff. But then she comes back on Survivor again, and she's in Survivor All-Stars, and she does not love her time there. She doesn't love the things that it does to her friends. It doesn't love the impact that it has on her family, like on her, or like her friends and like family, and the way that people perceive her. And she did not sign up for that. She signed up to go try to win $1 million on an island. She did not sign up to be painted as somebody who was a villain, somebody who's gonna be hated by people in the world. There were message boards about her. She comes back, and she, like I said, for this season, she comes back for Joe Schmo or whatever, and she's, you know, a good sport about it, but she doesn't have to be. In Jerry's same season, you had like Kyle Gleason, who is accused of like cheating, you know, and they're like questioning his honor, you know.
Or so, how about Deb Eaton, who went out to Survivor, and then the tabloids had a field day with, she's marrying her stepson. This is incest. Mm-hmm. And really ruined her life.
Yeah. They didn't sign up for that. What they signed up for was one thing, and what they got is another thing. So, Rob, I think that's a great point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And ultimately, I mean, did Matt Kennedy Gold come across that bad? Okay, I guess he came across as a little bit of a schmo, that he like got duped. But like, you walk away like, oh, he's the nicest guy. I mean, that's what the everybody from the show. I mean, and certainly,
I feel like they tried to make it so that he was like, oh, the nicest guy. But really, like, I mean, that whole part where he like tries to convince the girls to like go topless or kiss each other, like, it was like, okay, why were you so quick to like say yes to that? Like, that should have been like, no, we're not going to make them do that's ridiculous. And instead, he's like, okay, all right, girls, take your tops off. It's like, oh, whoa, okay. Like, I don't know what's going on here.
Yeah, that's the part about him that's not that great, that he does seem like that he's very eager to like the be involved in like all of like the spring break aspects of the Joe Schmo experience.
Yeah.
That on the good side of the ledger, is a very like loyal friend and does stick up for people who are, you know, you know, anytime there are people that need defending in other ways, that he is like a good friend to have.
Yeah, he's got the Spike creep energy that they're looking for. But yeah,
there was a lot of that, by the way. Like, it felt gross, a lot of it, not just from him, but like everybody being like, oh, look at this girl's breasts. Like, I'm going to put my hand on that. It was like, like, it just put such a bad taste in my mouth. And I didn't even remember that at the time. I think that like, it was a very different like cultural time. I mean, like, that was when like American Pie was like a thing. And like, that was like the humor. And now I feel like it's like, that's not really the place we're at as a culture. So thank God. But like, that at the time was so normal, like for shows, like that was the comedy. And it's weird to see it now like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think another good example of someone who goes on reality TV and becomes something that they might not have enjoyed is probably Eric Reichenbach, right? Like, he goes on reality TV. He has this really like I've read the like oral history of that moment. He has this really hard moment for him where he gives away his idol, and, you know, Jeff is calling him they're calling him the dumbest player who ever existed, and da 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 da.
Yeah.
But you do come away from that thinking like, he's a sweet guy, you know, and this is very similar. Like, they make fun of him. They call him Joe Schmo. You know, they named the show after him. That clip of him, like, what is going on? It's circulating all over the internet. Like, internet? Question? 2003? I guess there was internet. It's circulating all over television. You know, like, all over the place. It's on every clip show. The Soup. It's on Best Week Ever. It's everywhere. And he didn't ask for that. And I think Eric probably has a similar situation where, like, this really crazy thing happened to me when I was a young lad. And it's hard for me to go home, because even though y'all look at me as like, that's the guy who gave away the idol, or that's the really sweet guy who made the mistake, I'm still a human. And I have to go back to home to my dad, who's punching a hole in the wall because I blew $1 million. You know, like, this man has to go back to his friends and family who are now like, look at you. You're wearing ladies' underwear. Like, oh, you're so stupid. I can't believe you fell for this. Like, I would never fall for that. And so they're like, here's $100,000 and a TV. Please be quiet. Please don't hate us.
Yeah. Trips also.
Tahiti.
Yeah. We haven't talked at all about the host of the Joe Schmo show, who does play a considerable role in the storyline, that Ralph, the host of the show, that I think he's very good.
Mm, he's so good. I love him in this. I feel like he does such a good job, as especially because like the whole point is he's supposed to be the smarmy host. And I feel like he does such a good job. And then to add in like the storyline of like him having a crush on one of the contestants and one of the other contestants having a crush on him. And yeah. It's like this love triangle. I thought that was so funny. And Matt's just sitting here like, is that normal that you just like have like a crush on the host and that like you guys have a relationship? Yeah. Like, is that normal?
My only complaint with that is that I feel like that story doesn't go anywhere. Like, it's just like a bunch of crazy things happen, but I don't know what they wanted out of that.
I don't think there's anything specifically that they want out of any of it. I think they all are just like, okay, what crazy things can we throw at this guy? And like, let's see his reaction.
Mm.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe also to like avoid any sort of like him thinking he has some sort of like chance with any of the characters. I don't know.
Yeah.
So just for people who are listening to this who didn't watch the show or forgot that there is a character on the show. Is it Molly the Virgin? Mm-hmm.
Molly the Virgin and Ashley the Bitch, I believe is what they're called.
Yeah. And so that Joe Schmo, aka Matt, he kind of has a crush on Molly the Virgin, but she has a boyfriend back home, and at one point the boyfriend comes to visit and he's handcuffed to Molly, and the boyfriend is unhappy about that. But also the host of the show is being like very forward with Molly. And while Matt has a crush on Molly, the host seems like he is the one who's getting closer to the goal than Matt is. And so that is like increasingly like more and more like of a romance between them. And ultimately, when she gets voted out of the show, that she gets up there and starts making out with the host in front of everybody.
It's just so insane. Like, it's so funny that like, I mean, I feel like any other person would have been like, okay, we all know this is like not actually happening, right? Yeah. Like, this can't be real. And instead he's just like, I guess this is, you know, this is what's going on. Well, I guess this is the way it is.
I mean, this is like a year before Julie Berry is going to date Jeff Probst.
Yeah. And like 10 years before Dawson runs up and kisses him on the mouth.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, things happen. It's called reality TV. I think you can't rule anything out if you're in his position. Because that's the thing. We don't know what happens behind the scenes on these shows, right? We don't know if, you know, like crazy stuff like this happens on Big Brother. And like, we don't know the production stuff. So we get the edited version. So from his point of view, he's probably like, oh, they're probably going to edit that out. Or, mm-hmm. you know, maybe that wasn't a big thing. But like, yeah, this is definitely where the shenanigans are like the all time high.
Yeah. And just in defense of Matt, who is like, you know, ultimately duped, you know, as somebody who goes out and is a part of one of these reality shows, that I mean, if you would have told me on day 39 of Survivor that the whole thing was fake, I would have been blown away. But, you know, it's like you're just so excited to be there. You're not mm-hmm. questioning everything of like, is this fake? I mean, that nobody would have thought that like you go out on these productions. It's all new to you. It's all so there's so much excitement. So you totally can understand why he would just be like going along with the whole thing.
Oh, yeah. Rob, think about your season alone, right? You got the chocolate and peanut butter with the two models jump like naked standing up there.
Yeah.
You got the shelter burning down. You got granola gate or whatever that was. Was it turkey or granola? Whatever. You got all that going on in one season. You got Matt with the machete. You know, you got Christy voting the wrong way. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard this. But I was like, I trust you, but do I trust you? You know, but yeah, I'm just saying there are reasons to believe in a situation like that. Like production might have their finger on the scale a little bit to make some TV magic happen. And so when you see these kind of things, you have to say, well, maybe that could have happened because, you know, I've seen Stranger Things.
I just also want to add that Matt Kennedy Gold has some weird quirks also in that he that Chappelle reminded me of this when he talked about Survivor of the Amazon, that he can't eat chocolate. That chocolate makes him sick, and if he has to eat chocolate, like, it makes him want to throw up.
It's probably one of the worst allergies that I've ever heard of in my life, because I'm a person with some allergies, but
was it just that he didn't like the taste of it?
I don't know, because he said he had to throw up. So I don't, it sounded to me like it might have been an allergic reaction, but sometimes your body just tells you, like, you don't like this and you're not going to digest it. And it was just one of his things. Again, this is the sweetest man they found in the world. He just doesn't like chocolate.
Yeah.
That's a huge problem, though. You know, if you don't like chocolate, there's something going on. There's something wrong. I don't know. I don't know if I can like him.
They knew he was a mark the moment he said that. The moment they said, wait a second, I can't eat chocolate. They're like, I think this is our guy. He can't stomach chocolate. We got him.
Let's talk about this third episode of Joe Schmo that we're going to talk about here. The episode that features the talent show and features an appearance by Survivor's own Jerry Manthe. Chappelle, what's going on in the third episode?
So episode three starts with, you know, like Melissa was saying, they start off with they have to brief like the actors and say, okay, now what are we doing differently today? And this is kind of like them having to defuse the bomb that was Matt thinking that Ashley, the rich bitch, his words, not mine, has feelings for him. Like, it's gotten too close, right? Like, they're like, okay, if he starts catching feelings for you, like, then we're crossing some lines there. So we need to make a division between y'all two. And that's when she goes to him, I believe, and she starts to plant the seed that Molly is trying to get with the host. But Matt doesn't even believe her. Like, she's like, hey, Molly's trying to get with the host. Matt's like, what? Molly? No, she's a virgin. She's 19 and a virgin. Something. Mm-hmm. She can't be wanting to have sex now. She's 19. She waited this long. It's been years. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Also, I think it's funny that, like, she tells him something like that, and immediately his reaction is like, we got to get Ashley out. It's like, wait, what? Like, she's just like gossiping with you. Like, you should be like, oh, this girl feels close enough to me to talk to me. Let me keep her in. And instead, he just immediately goes and like rallies the troops to get her out.
Well, the question is he getting her out because she's like spreading this rumor about Molly, or is she getting him out? Is he getting her out because he likes Ashley and she likes the host? It's like, well, you don't want me.
Forget her then.
We might as well vote you out. You know,
yeah, like, you can leave.
You can go. I don't really need you here. So we have to question his motives there a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But eventually, you know, they get through this moment of. Actually, let's talk about that a little bit. He rallies the votes like he is a Survivor, Big Brother professional. Okay, he's hitting. He's working the room. Like, okay, tonight. Like, he goes to the Hutch, who he hates. The Hutch is supposed to be designed to be the a-hole of the show. Everyone's supposed to hate him. He's the villain. He goes to the Hutch and like, hey, don't worry about it. You're safe. I got you. I was going to vote for you tonight, but we got a different plan. We're voting out. Like, it was masterful watching him work like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then he turned into a regular reality TV, like, competitor. He goes to Dr. Pat, Kristen Wiig, and he's like, okay, Dr. Pat, here's what we're doing. And even in her little confessional where she's an actress and she says, you know, I really didn't like the way he pitched that. He didn't ask me if I was okay with it. He told me. And I was like, I've seen plenty of people get voted off Big Brother just for this. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of funny to me.
Yeah, he's playing hard.
Yeah.
And I think it's funny, too, that they're like, yeah, but we don't want Ashley to leave, though. Like, they're like, we need to do, like, that's not the end result that's going to happen here. Like, we need to figure out another reason that Ashley stays, because, like, their storyline was not done with her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He's a strategic mastermind. He's just like, he's like, okay, Ashley's out. Boom. He like turns into Sandra. Like, you want him out? Boom. It's done. Don't worry about it. Like, he's working the room. I was actually kind of impressed. I was like, look at you. You might have some acumen for one of these shows. That was fun.
Yeah.
I thought that the guy who played Brian did a very good job during the scene where Matt was trying to kind of like gauge their interest in getting Ashley out. It was him and Molly and Brian. It was Molly, Brian, and Matt. And they were talking and it was like, Matt was trying to gauge their interest, and Brian, I thought, did a really good job of like seeming totally real with it. Like, I felt like, you know, a lot of the times, like some of the people, it was like, because we knew they were acting, like you could kind of tell like, oh, they're acting here. But I felt like Brian always felt really real to me. And so I thought that was very interesting because he was also like a writer of the show. So he really did do a good job of playing like the best friend, like totally real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Brian did not mind getting naked a lot. There's a lot of male nudity also in Joe Schmo.
The men
male
like it.
It's funny. Yeah, it's funny. Male nudity is funny. Like, yeah, look, man butt.
Yeah, yeah. Nudity generally, they love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they, Rob, they, after he goes and tries to whip the vote, which is still
right.
astounding television. I think that's when they go to the talent show, which is the challenge of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
The challenges were very bizarre. Like every single episode, it was like just this strange challenge. It's like they couldn't put together like, and I guess it makes sense. Like you can't really put together some sort of like something physical or some sort of Survivor-esque challenge because you can't rig that as well. Cause it's like, he could just be really amazing at it. And then you're like, well, what do we do now? He just won immunity. But you know, like I do feel like some of the challenges were a little, I mean, this one was kind of like, okay, do a talent show. Like, is that really the challenge that we're going to have here? But I see why they did it, but still it's kind of like,
Yeah.
Yeah. Rob, did any of the challenges stand out to you, Rob?
I mean, a lot of them, it just seemed like very repetitive after a while of like, okay, we're going to get this adult actress who's covered in something and then get this adult actress wet or in front of the pool. And then, get covered in honey. And then also, so there was always like some, or like, put your hands on this adult actress. So
hands on a hard idol, you mean?
Yes. Yes. So I feel like the talent show was like the most normal competition they had in the entire series.
And then the one time they try and do something physical, Kristen Wiig goes to the hospital.
Reason why they avoided that.
Yeah. They're like, just models from now on, just adult film stars from now on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Of all the shows we've talked about on the Rewind, this is the most mundane challenge of them all. It's like, talent show, do what you want.
Yeah.
And there's like no rules. It's just do what you want. Jerry Manthe will decide if you win.
Yeah.
And that's it.
I thought Brian's was pretty impressive with the double xylophone.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the marimba. Yeah.
The marimba.
Well,
yeah. That was good.
Jerry Manthe is there and she is going to play up the bitch character of the, like, so no matter what these people do, like they do like really impressive stuff. And Jerry is just completely unimpressed with what they do. Brian plays like this amazing xylophone symphony. And she's like, that was terrible. Like,
it's like, give a two like out a of one. 10.
Yeah,
yeah, like they, she was giving them all like ones and twos and threes. So bad.
He was so good. I wonder how long he practiced that, or if he's just like a practice like marimba like performer. Because he's like,
he must be a pro.
It was great. It was so good. I was impressed.
Yeah,
I feel like his was one of the best ones.
Ooh, another one that stood out though, Dr. Pat. Can we talk about Kristen Wiig and his puppet funny. Show?
Mm-hmm.
Kristen Wiig and the puppet show.
I couldn't even laugh. I couldn't laugh. Oh my God. So
Earl
real.
Could. Yeah.
When she's like, whoop dee doo, you came home. Oh my God. That was so funny. And then she's just so serious about it.
Yeah.
I can't keep a straight face because I was in tears.
I know everyone in the audience was just like, wow. Oh my God. Like, yeah. And then she, I don't know how she, yeah, she just literally. Just kept played it so straight the whole time. And it's just was so good.
She had confided to Matthew about her three marriages, which was also like a very funny, like, I'm assuming it was an improv that she gave him about her three marriages, about how she was young and then she married the young guy who was a stereo installer and then it was, that was no good. And then she got married to her professor who was old and she told the whole story and then basically like reenacted it with the puppets. But Earl, the is he a Vietnam vet? And he was laughing the whole time that she was going. And Matthew, this is one of the moments where you see that he's like, hey, like she's that is that supposed to be funny? Like this is serious. This is her life.
This is her life.
This is her life. You know, it bothers him that he's laughing during her emotional puppet show.
Yeah, and while the puppets are like. Physically, the puppet is being physically and mentally abused. Like, it's just so awful. Like, oh my God, it's so crazy.
I couldn't laugh because I was engulfed in the story of the puppet. She's like, I know something you don't need a remote to turn on. And then 30 seconds later, she like gets slapped upside down. I was like, oh my gosh, is this domestic violence? And meanwhile, Melissa's at home laughing, Earl's laughing, and me and Matt are both disgusted, like, oh my God.
Like, is she okay?
Maybe I do have feelings. Yeah, maybe I do have feelings. What's this about?
Oh my God, it was so good. And I mean, like, especially like, it's so hard because, you know, like, Kristen Wiig as an actress, like, knows that this is fake, but supposed to be real, but supposed to be a puppet show about a real event that, like, happened in her character's past. Like, I just don't know how she played that. So, like, she played it so well. I was so impressed.
Chappelle, what did you think about Matthew's beatboxing talents?
Okay. Woo. All right. This was tough for me because, again, Matt had me at hello. I've been like, I can tell this man feels strongly and he is there to support these people. So I'm like supporting him through my television screen, but I cannot support this. His beatboxing. Oh my gosh. Like, this was like, he tried. He committed. He committed. If you
wore the hat.
He wore the hat. Yeah, he wore those horrible pants.
He had the
pants.
Like the backwards beret, like he was Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah, he looked like LL Cool J for like In the House. It was upsetting. But
does LL Cool J have you blocked? Did you say that on Twitter the other day?
Why are we bringing that up? That ain't got nothing to do with this. So anyway,
that's so crazy. I don't understand.
He's got
that.
Some horrible pants on, and he's beatboxing, and he ends up getting like 5 points because, well, like he got like 1 point from Jerry, I think.
Yeah,
and then he got like 5 or something from the other guy. Because
yeah, I think I can bring up him him beatboxing. Let me see if
please
I...
Please don't.
You don't want to hear it?
I mean, it's fine. Do it.
Okay, here's some of Matthew beatboxing.
I've been beatboxing and messing around since 83 now. But for a long time, I mean, I always just kid around with it. I never thought that it was a talent.
Jerry Manthe has a very pained look on her face.
Me and I am her. We are one. Jerry and I are like, what is happening here?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, meanwhile, I'm dancing. It's great.
I love that the other contestants, though, that like the actors, they clap for him because I think that's an underrated part of this. Even though they're acting, they're making real bonds with him. They just have to hide it behind their actor and actress facade. So a lot of these times when he's crying, they feel for him. Or when, you know, like a lot of, they get the luxury of going to sleep at night knowing this is not them and he does not. And yeah, it's fascinating to watch.
Mm-hmm.
One of the other things that I thought is a really good character moment that happens in the talent show. First of all, there's Kip, who probably a problematic character to have. You would not have Kip in 2021, who is that he is billed as the gay guy on the show, played by a straight person playing a gay person on the show, but
like playing a flamboyant gay person,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, you wouldn't ideally do it that way now.
No,
and he does a card trick, and he does such a bad card trick. But Matthew says when he's like, "Is this your card?" At the end, he says, "Yes, that was my card." And
Jerry ruins it.
Tries to sell the magic trick. And Jerry Manthe like calls it, that wasn't his card.
But
that
only
was so
Matt,
sad.
Yeah.
Yeah, but only Matt would go through with that. Anybody else be like, ooh, Kip, I'm sorry, you messed up. You know, like, this is a competition for $100,000. And Matt's like, no, this is the card. Kip, it's fine. You did okay. Like, it's cool. So yeah, like I said, there's a ton of great character moments for him. He has some creepy masculine tendencies, you know, but there is still like a warm, like fuzzy guy there that is just going through this very emotional thing. And he thinks he's going along, you know, he's going along with it with other people. Mm-hmm. And he's just not.
Ultimately, the Hutch is going to close out the talent show, Melissa, with a rendition of America the Beautiful.
Please don't play it.
I won't play it. Melissa, what'd you think of the Hutch's singing?
A beautiful singer. Honestly, I think it was kind of funny because it was just so out of character for him to all of a sudden just be like this beautiful singer and such a good, like a serious and like patriotic song too. Like, whereas the rest of the season, he's this just like burping, farting, like loudmouth guy. And I just thought that it really rounded him out, if you will. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it hit the right note with Matt, though. Like, remember, they still have to sell this story to Matt, but they have the right person. That Matt, he sings America the Beautiful in like a decent tone. Like, mm-hmm. It's not like he blew it out the water or did anything amazing, but he sang it and you could tell like he put some effort into it. And Matt's like, hey, the Hutch, I've been trying to get you out since week one, but you kind of won me over with that. Like, it was good to see you care about something and to like put your heart into something. And it worked. Like, had this been anyone else, they're like, what? The Hutch singing America? This is, what is he? What is wrong with you? Like, why are you like this? Or like, that's, you know, but it worked on him.
Chappelle, I think it was really important to have the Hutch in the cast because I think that in comparison to the Hutch, like the Hutch makes Matt seem like such a better guy. And it's the fact that he's always pushing back against the Hutch and trying to tell the Hutch to change his ways. Like, if you didn't have that character, I don't know if you would come away from this show feeling like, oh, Matt is a really nice guy.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. He had a good villain. You know, he had a good villain who you could put across from him to where like, he's one of those protective people, right? Like, so he's so loyal, like you were saying, that anytime somebody is wronging someone, and that's very much the Hutch's style, he's speaking up and he's like consoling them. Whereas like you pick another person who is probably less combative or even like less outspoken, they might just sit around and let it happen. And then you're looking at them like, oh, you know, like, you're no fun, or you're like, you're not a great guy because you're just standing by and watching this creep act like a creep. But, you know, Matt's creepy ways get overshadowed by the Hutch, and he actually does the thing that you would like for him to do with speaking up and like being there for the other people. So, yeah, that's a great point.
Yeah. Like when the Hutch sleeps with Dr. Pat and the Hutch is talking a bit like basically like kissing and telling, like Matt's like, that's not right. Like, don't be like that, Hutch. And so like he definitely like, you know, has like certain things he's going to push back on.
Mm-hmm. I think they did luck out in terms of casting, where they cast someone who is willing to speak up and who is willing to kind of like push back, because they could have really, you guys are right, they absolutely could have gotten someone who's just like, I'm just going to stay out of it. This isn't my business. And then like, what's the show then? You know, if the person's not going to like get involved in any of the drama, quote unquote, like, then you just have a show where drama's happening around a guy and he's just sitting there silently being like, that's weird. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a lot better to have him be involved and insert himself into these situations and kind of try to like steer people in a certain direction, because we know they're actors. And so like, oh, it's funny that way, versus like, if we're just watching actors act and he's just standing there watching with us, it's very different.
Mm-hmm. Or like worse, like, could you imagine like, you know, that him and like the Hutch are like, you know, it's like Jackson and Jack from Big Brother 21, like partners in crime.
Oh my God. Can you imagine if like it went awry like that, where they bring him in and it's like, oh man, you're my dude. Yeah. Like, we're BFFs. Like,
Hutch, like, the Hutch is the greatest guy. That is my best friend
he's
forever.
So funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like Brian's supposed to be the buddy, and instead he's like this nerd.
Loser.
Or he's like really doing the strategy too. He's like, I'm keeping Brian around so I can cut him at the end. You're like, Brian.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. They really could have gotten someone else and it could have been a very different show for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like they found the most accepting man. I won't say the sweetest man in America, but he pretty much was accepting of anything. You go to him and say, I'm a marriage therapist, but I've had three failed marriages and here's how they all went wrong. And he's like, okay. You know, or then like you go like the Hutch is like a super creep and then he sings America the Beautiful and Matt's like, okay. And you know, like, Molly has a crush and is going to make out with the host.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, like, you know, like, he comes around to everything. He's like, he's not going to shame you, you know?
Well, he has the moment in the first episode where they introduce Kip and everybody is stunned because he says to Kip, like, oh, you're gay, right? And everyone is like, basically, so like, wait, hold, did he just out Kip on the show? But then he's like he immediately realizes like, oh, that was like a messed up thing to do. And he's like very apologetic about the whole thing. And then is like super defensive about Kip the whole rest of the way, especially with the Hutch.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't imagine being one of the actors and having that be like the first impression of him is like, he's just like, you're gay, right? It's like, whoa. Okay. Like, I do not know what this guy's going to do. Like, we really don't know. Like, we thought it was going to be, you know, relatively some kind of easygoing guy. And if he's already doing this, mm-hmm. like what's going to happen later on? I mean, luckily that wasn't really indicative of like who he is and like what he was going to do later. But like, you know, I feel like as a first impression, that might scare me a little because I would be afraid that he would call me out on like whatever acting I was doing or whatever character I was playing. And I'd have to like justify it and explain myself. And so, you know, I can imagine them like shaking in their boots a bit.
Yeah. And his tone wasn't like accusatory, like, no. Look at you, gay guy, I'm out of you. It was more like, hey, look, a gay person.
Yeah.
Like, whoa, you don't do that to people.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, I'm sorry. I don't have an issue with that. I was just, you know, just thought it was a gay person standing there. I thought I'd talk to him. Mm-hmm. You know, so for him, he's just so accepting of everything. Like, you just throw it at him and he's like, oh, okay, you know, but he'll defend you. You know, like you said, he takes a liking to Kip very quickly. And he's like, okay, well, no one's going to make fun of you because I accept you and they are too.
Yeah, like it's 2003. There's going to be one gay person on the reality TV show. And I think he mm-hmm. felt like, oh, I found him.
Yeah.
And, mm-hmm. you know, like, and he's very apologetic about the whole thing afterwards mm-hmm. and tries to make it right with Kip. Little does he know that Kip is actually a straight person, pretending to be a gay person on the show, but that's a...
also pretending to be Hispanic.
Yeah, yeah. So it's, I
this
think...
Vietnamese man is like putting like a Latin accent on. That's very weird.
You wouldn't do it now. You wouldn't do it.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be done.
Yeah. But in episode 3, this is going to be the most dramatic elimination of the whole series, Chappelle.
Yeah, so after the Hutch wins immunity and he wears the immunity robe, they have to go to their elimination, which is very Flavor of Love style.
Yeah.
You know, like in Flavor of Love, they hand the women their clocks. In this show, they have decorative plates.
Melissa, I love the eliminations.
Oh, it's so good. That's my favorite part of the show. It's just so like overwrought and like dramatic and they just smash the plate. Oh, it's so good.
Yeah. Underrated, you know, that of course they say, you know, ashes to ashes, dust to dust. Okay. And they say you're dead to us. But when the host starts off the ceremony and says, one of you is about to say goodbye to high society and return to your sad existence of working for the man.
And they say it every time. It's so funny.
He says it like totally
your earnest. Sad existence working for the man, and everyone's just like nodding along like, yep, we are. Oh my god, it's so good.
They wanted to speak to Matt's motivation. Matt is like, I think it's the first episode where they're like, what, why are you here, you know, like what's your story? And he goes, because I don't have nothing else to do, you know. Mm-hmm. Matt is like, I'm broke. I am poor. That's why I'm here. I want to win some money. I signed up for this show because I thought I could win some money. And I'm tired of being poor. And I felt that in my soul. Okay. Mm-hmm. So if you start off any day with me saying like, okay, Chappelle, today you could be broke again or you could not be broke, I'm like, okay, I'm dialed in. You know, so it was the perfect thing to kind of talk to his core motivation. The rest of them are actresses and actors. They don't care. Mm-hmm. But he is like tuned in to like, do I want to go back to working for the man? I don't think so. It sounds ghetto. Not for me, you know?
I wish on Wikipedia they gave me like the voting chart like they do with the Survivor seasons. Rob, nobody has done that. Nobody has done
they don't
that.
Need it.
Yeah. What's the edging?
Why do they need it?
I want how many what votes did Earl get?
Yeah, that's the thing, is I feel like they didn't fully explain, like, even to Matt, like why Earl
did
got
Matt
out.
Vote for Earl?
No,
he voted for Ashley.
Yeah.
Matt voted for Ashley. Kip whipped the votes to where Earl got voted out. And then on Earl's way out, Earl does his final speech, because unlike any other reality show, they say, okay, now that you're on your way out, you get to address the people who voted you mm-hmm. out. And that's not something we see on any show. It's normally like, get your bag and get out.
They didn't do that on Flavor of Love, Chappelle?
No, those people just, like, he would say, show me some love, and he would give them a hug, and then they would turn around and spit on each other. But, like, this time, he's like, no, come up here and say your final words.
Yes.
And Earl stands up there, he's like, you know what? The only thing I took from this is how much I love Kip. Kip is such a great guy. I'm a grizzled old veteran. It was very like Rudy and Richard Hatch that they were trying to play for. And so then he's like, on the way out, like, I got to hug Kip. And he hugs Kip and Matt just bursts into tears. He can't. The guilt in him is just overwrought because he's like, no, Kip is the reason you're going home. Don't hug him. But I also can't tell you that because I too love Kip. What's happening? I feel so bad. And he just breaks down.
Yeah.
This was too much for me. I couldn't watch it. It was so sad.
Yeah. It was a big moment because the whole production was like, what are we doing? They're hurting this man.
Yeah.
That was when they almost like quit the whole thing. They were almost like, I don't know if we can move forward with this because like these are real emotions. These are real feelings. And I think that definitely was the pivot from, you know, we're doing this to kind of poke fun at this person and laugh at him and like humiliate him. Whereas afterwards it was like, you know, like that's really not the vibe we should be going for here because I really don't think America would be cool with that at this point. So we kind of need to like change gears here. And I think they did the right thing by changing gears. And if they had just kept like poking fun at him, it would be like, okay, this is just cruel at this point, you know?
Yeah.
He was going to quit the show. Let's be very clear. Like had this kept going, the reaction to Kip, he would not have been able to handle it had they not pivoted. Because he was done. He like collapsed onto the stairs and just started bawling. And people were like coming to console him. He goes to his room and he's crying. He's saying this. He went full Jerry Mathy. It's not worth it. Like he's doing the things. And it's like, this is what reality TV does to normal people who are not surrounded by actors. This man is surrounded by actors. And he's having the same exact moment that we've seen time and time again when people get blindsided on the show. You know, this makes me question myself a little bit. I love a good blindside on Big Brother and Survivor, and you're like, get it together. Why are you crying? You just met this person. But look at poor Matt. He's surrounded by actors, and he's going through the same thing that we judge these people for in the house week to week on Big Brother. Oh, it's so gross. Yeah, I would have pivoted. I couldn't have done it. I could not have been complicit in it. I'm sorry. This would not be me.
Yeah, I feel like if I was one of the producers at that point, and I do think that they were feeling this way, it was like, what do we do now? Like, we can't do this. We can't put this guy through this. This poor guy, you know? I do think that they handled it in the right way because otherwise they really would have just like had to stop the show. But, you know, there's obviously still lingering feelings where it's like, okay, well, yeah, as much as you gave me the money and the trips and the TV or whatever, like I'm still being humiliated on TV. Like this was all still like a big joke, essentially. Like a big trick that you guys played on me. And, you know, I'm sure he didn't feel great about it, but you know, I think they did the best they could with trying to make him feel okay afterwards, you know?
Yeah.
So Joe Schmo would be a big hit for Spike TV. So much so that they did Joe Schmo season 2. Melissa, is Joe Schmo season 2? I know they couldn't pull it off from what you were saying, but is it considered to be as good as the first season?
From my perspective and from what I know of at the time of like general sentiment was mainly like everyone was really excited for it. Everyone was like, oh my God, yay, it's coming back. We love Joe Schmo. Like that was such a good show. Like this is exciting. But because people knew about the Joe Schmo show the first time around, you know, it was very hard to find people who, you know, could be fooled like that. And they did run into that problem and it did kind of ruin the show a bit because they kind of had to just like change everything and then make one of the, because they tried to do two marks. So they tried to trick two people, one, a girl and a guy. And they tried to trick them both. And then the girl ended up catching on like right away and was like, is this like the Joe Schmo show? And they're like, oh my God. So then they had to bring her on as like an actress. Mm-hmm. Like they had to basically let her on out.
Bring
secret.
Her in.
Yeah, exactly. Cause otherwise they were going to have to shut everything down. And they ended up just tricking another guy or that guy. And I do feel like for me, I mean, maybe if I rewatch it now, I might have a different feeling about it, but I do feel like for me, it wasn't as good as the first time around because it was a dating show.
Yes.
And for me, like I wasn't really interested in that at the time. So like a lot of the dating like tropes. Like I just didn't really like, I was like, okay, whatever. But like the first season was like Survivor-esque, yes. Big Brother-esque. And so I was really into that. Whereas like the dating thing, it was kind of like you had to watch people like go on a date. And it felt kind of weird to have like the guy who's being tricked try and like win over the girl, and it's like feelings are there, you know. It's not just like, oh, we're just competing for money. Mm-hmm. Like it was like we're competing for someone's like heart, and it just felt different. So I didn't like that one as much.
I had gotten a text from somebody who I trust who said Joe Schmo season two is better than season one.
I have to disagree with that, but unless, yeah. I mean, I guess like if this person really likes you know, dating shows and knew a lot of like the tropes from that, like you might get a kick out of it. I just felt like that wasn't really like my area. And I think even the third season,
I didn't even know there was a third season. So in 2013, there is a third season of the Joe Schmo Show that airs. Season one was 2003, 2004 is the second season. Melissa, tell us about season three of the Joe Schmo Show.
Yeah, season three is about bounty hunting.
Yeah.
So I was so excited for it to come back again because it had been so long. I mean, after the scare of the second season when the person caught on and it just was so popular at that point that like they really were struggling to find people who didn't know about the show and who wouldn't get caught, like wouldn't catch on to it. But then they took this giant hiatus. And we're able to like come back at a time when people really didn't really remember Joe Schmo, or at least they didn't think it was coming back. And in fact, when they released the news about this reality show, they didn't like initially when it was like, hey, this is on the schedule. They didn't say that it was Joe Schmo show. They said it was a show called like Bounty Hunters or something. The Full Bounty. And so they didn't even reveal that it was a Joe Schmo show at first. So everyone just thought it was just a show about bounty hunting. Then once it aired, they switched and were like, hey, by the way, this is actually the Joe Schmo show. So that way they could fool people into thinking this was really just a show about bounty hunting. But for me, I couldn't get into this season as much either, just because like I wasn't interested in bounty hunting. Mm-hmm. Like I feel like it, like the underlying premise also has to kind of get me in order for me to be really interested. I mean, I love the general concept of like fooling someone into thinking it's a reality show and like having to go through all the various things to try and or like behind the scenes things to try and trick them into thinking that, and the production stuff. I really like that, but I think, like overall, I just wasn't as interested. I also think it was a shorter season. I don't know if it was, but I
think it was the same. It looks like it's 10 episodes.
Feeling a shorter season. And so I just like, I couldn't really get into that one as much as the first season. I just feel like it never hooked me like the first season did. And I think partially because it's like, well, we've already kind of seen it done. And there's really not that many other things you can like play off of when it comes to reality TV. Like at the time it was like, reality TV was so new and we were just starting to realize that like there were tropes associated with reality TV that like when they actually like played off those stuff, it was like, oh my God, they're calling these reality shows out for things that I started to notice. And then now it's kind of like, well, yeah, duh, you're going to have these caricatures, like nothing new.
We have podcasts to break it all down.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, I would probably still, I kind of want to go back and watch them all and see. Maybe I'll have a different perspective, but I just know that was my take at the time I watched it.
Yeah. Chappelle, anything else on the Joe Schmo Show?
We pretty much covered everything from season one, of course. Season two is very similar, like Melissa was saying, it's in the vein of like The Bachelorette.
We didn't mention that they tried to make him think he was going to eat dog poop.
I think because we hated that, or at least I did.
No, we hated it as a family.
I thought it was just like, I mean, like legally, there is no way they're going to have him eat that. So like,
but he just tried to like basically said that like that, and they brought him to have a meeting with the executive at that point.
Also, like they would never just like bring in an executive to be like, well, let's meet with this one reality like contestant. Like, no way. It just is so unrealistic. Like
production.
I did think that was one of the funniest parts when he was meeting with the executive. And like the executive was basically like just like telling him like look, you do this, like I'll destroy you, we'll send you back. Like we need ratings. Like I thought that guy was really funny.
Yeah, and then they're
dark
like
underbelly.
Yeah,
they're like, okay, well, then you have to get the girls to go topless. Like, I just like, I mean, if I was Matt in that moment, I'd be like, okay, this is not real. Like, I feel like I would have just totally been like,
they thought that he was going to say no to that. They thought that he was like, no way. And then he was like, okay, fine, we'll do it.
Fine. And he goes down there and he's like, you know what, in this world, what people want, ladies, take your tops off. It's like, what?
Yes. Well, no, he was like trying to say, like, he was like, I know this male dominated society. Like, it's the patriarchy.
Yeah.
It's like, you are contributing. Patriarchy.
You know how it is, ladies. I don't like
you
it
know
either.
How it is, so do it.
I'm not happy about this.
God. And they're like, why don't they have you guys kiss? And it's like, nobody wants that.
It's going to hurt me more than it hurts you guys. You just go ahead and do it. We're just going to zoom in real quick on the camera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But make sure the camera's on this.
Yeah. There's a lot of wacky shenanigans between both seasons, but Melissa's right. I don't think you can do it twice. I mean, if you do, you do have to have that big gap between like what they did for season two and season three, where it's almost 10 years to where people aren't even thinking about it anymore. But I do think it's possible to pull it off, because there are shows like Too Hot to Handle that the premise is, hey, you're on this show and, you know, like, it's for one thing, but then boom, we switched it into something else. Or even like The Circle, that sounds like 5 years ago, you couldn't imagine a show where all we were doing is texting somebody and you could you could be somebody or you could completely not be that person. And it's part of the game. So like, imagine if season three or four of The Circle was just like, we only have one contestant and everybody else is a plant. And that one person is like, I'm Christy and I'm catfishing as John and all this other stuff, and everybody knows it, and they're just playing into it every week, and they're making them do stupid stuff. You know,
I think
like,
they could
it
do
could
it
be
now.
Done.
Yeah,
it can definitely
I think they
be
could
done.
Bring it back. I mean, yeah, because you're right. There are just so many crazy reality shows now. It's not so like homogenous. It's like there's so much. I mean, like, it's plausible that there is like some wacky show out there that people are going to be on.
Well, a little bit like they play into this on Too Hot to Handle, where they tell them they're going on one show that's about like, you're going to a swingers orgy television show. And then they turn it like, actually, you're on Too Hot to Handle. So they kind of like reveal it in the first episode on that. But I guess it's that same sort of like bait and switch idea.
I actually don't know what Too Hot to Handle is. What is it?
No, well, Melissa. Yeah, Melissa.
I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I'm surprised your parents don't call you and make you watch it.
Yeah, family fun day.
Right.
Melissa, you gotta watch this. There's all these singles on an island and they can't have sex.
Yeah, check out Too Hot to Handle season 2 coverage on RHAP Rehab Ups with Christy McInnes and various guests if you want more information about Too Hot to Handle.
Yeah, Too Hot to Handle probably would have found a home on Spike TV back in 2004. Now it has to be on Netflix.
100%. 100%.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, Melissa, this was such a great week here with you on podcast. Yeah, three out of the last four nights.
I know, it's crazy.
We did the Big Brother 21 premiere. Mm-hmm. We did this Joe Schmo show.
Yeah.
What's next for you? The BB Roundtable coming up on Tuesday?
Yep. Tuesday Roundtable and then Wednesday episode recap.
Okay.
More Big Brother.
All right. It's the summer of Melissa, everybody. Get ready. Where do we follow you, Melissa?
You can follow me on Twitter and I guess all social media at It's Melissa with 3 A's.
Okay. Chappelle, what's coming up for you?
Well, Rob, this is July, as you know.
July!
July. We got to keep the ball rolling here on the RHAP Rewind. And so I think next week we will tackle Joe Millionaire.
Melissa, did your parents make you watch Joe Millionaire?
I did watch Joe Millionaire. What? Yeah. The winner was, Zora?
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert, I think I'm pretty sure it was Zora. But
I feel spoiler alert for a show that's like a billion years old.
And really the question of winner is really what the question is at this point, right? Because
That
mark?
Was such a crazy show. The shows back then were just so crazy. It was like, okay, how can we trick these people?
How can we lie to you? What a time to be alive.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I'll be hanging out with you next week to talk about that. And then we'll see what other wacky shenanigans we can get into in the meantime.
Okay.
Speaking of like reality shows that trick people, did you ever see that reality show where it was a dating show and there was like half guys there that were gay and half guys that were straight, and they had to trick them into thinking they were straight. And if a gay guy got picked in the end, the gay guy won and got the money. But if the straight guy got picked at the end, they split the money. Did you watch that
show? I can't.
Was that in the U.S.?
I can't remember what it's called.
It was in the U.S. It was on Fox.
Yeah,
like I was looking it up as we were doing this, but I don't.
Yeah,
I was playing it straight. That is what it is.
Yeah. 2004 hit Playing It Straight.
It is so insane that that is like a show that was that existed at the time. And I watched it with my family, of course. Like, we watched all
this
these
Melissa
crazy
origin
shows.
Story is
literally. Yeah. It's like, if you can think of like some like at the time, it was like we watched Survivor and Big Brother and we were like, we need more. And then it was just like any reality show that came out, it was like, we're going to watch it. And it was just, yeah.
It was too much.
My language.
It was too much.
That's my love language right there. But yeah, until then, Rob, yeah, follow me on Twitter at Chappelle Show, @CHAPPELS_show.
Okay, we got so much Big Brother going on. We're still doing the top 40 countdown. Check it all out at robhasawebsite.com. Thank you so much for listening to this edition of the RHAP Rewind. We'll be back next week as Joe Lai rolls on. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.